Peter Shellfish, please come back.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the fifth episode in the big epic linear Song of Ice and Fire reread. Today we are joined by various podcasters. I'm Bina 007 on the forums, in no particular order. Tanya.
Hi, I'm Silent on the forums.
Matt.
Hey, Varley on the forums.
Joanna.
Hi, this is Joe13 on the forums.
White Raven.
Brett, in real life. White Raven, why'd you do that to me? You're just trying to trip me up. Everybody else should say their name, but I'm White Raven. Brett in real life, White Raven on the forums.
Alias?
Zach in real life. Glad to be joining you guys for this cool thing you're doing.
Hi, guys. Sorry you're a bit late.
Hi, Vikasha. So, everyone, this is Vikasha, who's another person that Tanya is friends with, who I met at her house swimming last night, who is a big Song of Ice and Fire fan. So we recruited for the podcast.
Yay!
Okay, so Amber Rocks, it turns out, is stalking us, but we can continue with maybe Vikasha, as you're new to the podcast, asking how you got into Song of Ice and Fire, have you ever done a reread, all that kind of good stuff.
Okay, so, I got into Song of Ice and Fire when I was in my second year of university, because a friend of mine who I kind of used to think was pretty smart and had good taste in books recommended it. And, of course, he also then told me not to read beyond the third book because, well, we know what happens in the third book, but I'm not going to say anything at this point of time. But I haven't done a reread myself. So this is the first time I'm actually getting back to the books. And I read little bits of various ones at various times, but this is the first time sort of going back to the series. So it's quite exciting, actually. So, yeah, I mean, not really done podcasting at all before, so...
Well, that's okay. You don't need any kind of expertise whatsoever to join Vassals of Kingsgrave. So It's great you could join. And just feel free to chip in as and when you can get a word in edgewise, basically.
Right. Well, that sounds good.
Okay. So today we are going to be covering, from Game of Thrones, Jon 3, Tyrion 3, Arya 2, and Bran 4. But before that, just a few points of clarification, because there's been a lot of discussion about the previous episode on the podcast of Ice and Fire Forum. And some points that came up were that, I mean, as always, a lot of chat about how culpable Sansa is. I think that's an ongoing discussion. But there was also, I think, SJ Lee made a really good point about the bankrupting of Westeros. I, in particular, was quite scathing about Robert emptying the treasury. And he made a good point that we now know that Littlefinger was skimming. So I was probably a bit too harsh, so well pointed out. And then Ulfgator1 made a really good point that as we are doing a linear reread, we should probably point out stuff that we now know from later on in the books that reflects on the chapters we've just read. So he was talking about... Ned, the fact that we now know that Jaime was going to cut off Arya's hand if he'd been the one who'd found her. So he later says to Cersei, you know, that's the things I do for love. It was only by chance that Stark's own men found the girl before me if I had come upon her first. Which I guess is kind of ironic, given what later happens to Jaime.
What do you think Ned would have done if Jaime came back with Arya and she was missing a hand?
Declared war or some shit?
I would hope so.
Yeah, shit would have gone down.
Do you think Robert would have been... Which side do you think Robert would have taken had that happened?
His wife's.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah, probably his wife's.
No shit.
I think if it came down to something like an injury like that, obviously we don't quite know for sure, but I don't think he would necessarily... It would be a clear-cut decision for him. But...
Yeah, I agree with that.
He's going to be like, she's a woman. What does she need her hand for? It's fine, Ned.
that sounds like something he would say. Yeah.
I'm just taking as my evidence what he does in the chapter when he, you know, the whole case is presented to him, when Ned's like, well, at least, you know, execute the wolf yourself, or, you know, intervene, this is just kids, and he totally takes his wife's side, so...
Yeah, but I think, like Vikasha says, if it was more drastic, if it wasn't just, like, killing a wolf, because I think he would see more of a grievance in, like, cutting off Arya's hand than killing a wolf, because he just sees it as, like, a dangerous animal, I guess.
Yeah, because with the wolf, it's still like, it's just, okay, fine, you can get rid of it. And he thinks that that's an easy way to just stop the whole thing and get his wife out of his way. But if you actually have, like, someone harming one of the great houses, like, doing something like that, I think the game changes significantly from there.
Yeah, I think it is a very different situation, but I think ultimately he'd still go with whatever seems easiest to him, like for himself to get out of the situation, not to have to deal with it. And I'm not sure what exactly that would be in that case.
I agree with Tanya.
I suppose a different question is whether you think Jamie would actually have done that. I mean, it's one thing to say something when he's fucking Cersei. It's another thing to actually do it. Like, you know, pushing a little boy out of a castle window when he knew no one else was watching is one thing. But to do something as public as cutting off her hand.
I
think it's probably something he would have done for several reasons. First of all, it definitely would have been something that Cersei would have approved of. So I could see him doing it just because he knows Cersei will think it's a good idea. And he does, like, it doesn't seem like something he would say just like that when he wouldn't actually have done it. Like, I do think he would have done it. I think he wouldn't have said it, and I don't think he would have cared what anyone thinks. He does seem quite reckless about it.
I mean, yeah, because when you see what he does when he essentially attacks Ned in the streets of King's Landing, it shows.
Yeah,
He's not incapable of taking rash actions, so.
I could see him, rather than cutting off her hand and bringing her back, I could see him just killing her and leaving her in the woods. But, like, I think Jaime is smarter than that. Does that make sense?
Right. No.
Because
it takes an action against House Lannister to make him
attack
Ned.
Right, that's the difference. It's a grievance against him personally, like capturing Tyrion, that gets him to do that. Arya didn't do anything to get Jaime's goat.
Arya was responsible for an attack on Joffrey, so it is an attack on him. Not even because it's his son, but just because Joffrey is a Lannister in some respect, so...
Yeah, I think it's a good comparison with the situation where he attacks Ned. I think it's a fairly similar situation, so he probably would react in a similar way. I don't think he would care about it being public and potentially causing problems.
I do think he cares more about Tyrion than Joffrey, though, for sure.
Yeah, but I would expect that he cares about how Cersei feels about the situation. I don't think he cares that much about Joffrey, but he knows that Cersei cares about him. And he cares about, like, Cersei caring about...
Yeah, does Cersei caring about Joffrey matter to him more than him caring about Tyrion directly? Like, the second order Cersei caring is more strong in a way.
The only thing I would say is I think the grievance may be less because, at least to Jaime, it may not seem like a big deal that Joffrey got a little beat up. Like, he wouldn't see it as the big overblown thing that Joffrey and Cersei are making it out to be, that he got, like, bitten by a wolf.
No, maybe. But I still think he would react. I don't think it's as serious for him as the situation with Tyrion, but I still think that he would react in a similar way just because it would be strong enough. Like, it would still be an attack on his family, and he would still basically have to defend, I guess, Cersei in the situation.
Yeah, but it's like the difference of, like, kids playing and, you know, High Lords playing. When Catelyn kidnaps Tyrion, like, that's a big power move rather than, like, oh, like, the kid hit the other kid. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But the point is that I don't think Cersei would necessarily agree with that. Cersei probably thinks this is really serious, and he would side with her no matter what his personal opinion on this is.
I mean, well, it probably wouldn't be necessarily entirely relevant, but obviously you're looking at sort of royal laws about striking a member of the royal family. And so even if it's done in a valid, for almost a valid reason, that would still technically constitute a wrong. And so Jaime might even feel that he was justified in doing that by law in Westeros. So, you know, that's... another angle to look at there.
That's a good point.
But it's not even a current law. Like, in the passage that Ulf Gator one quotes, he says, the old penalty for striking one of the blood royals. So it made me think, like, it was maybe an old law that had fallen into disuse or something.
Yeah, I don't think it was necessarily, like, abolished, though. I think they just hadn't had an opportunity to enforce it in a while, I guess.
Jamie still has both his hands, right?
Yeah, well, that's a... yeah, that's
for
a
now.
Case. Yeah. Complicated.
It's complicated.
Also, they were fighting at Winterfell, so it was like, so should, was it Bran beat up Tommen?
Yeah, but that was in the con. Wasn't that like a clone? That was sort of like they were being trained for that.
So. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
Case. I think there's a difference.
There's a difference between well, that would be considered like Bran and Tommen's formal training, whereas when you have the other incident, then it's just. I mean,
unprovoked, right? Or supposedly unprovoked.
It'd be like Bran fighting Tommen, and then like Summer run. Oh, not Summer. Shaggy Dog running in and biting Tommen's arm in the middle of the fight.
That sounds like something Shaggy Dog would do, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So they had to chain his ass up.
Okay. Any other comments on the feedback from last time?
I wish I was there.
Aww. Okay, then. On to John 3. So, White Raven.
All right. Well, it starts with John kicking ass and taking names on the training grounds, and Alistair Thorne, the a-hole master-at-arms of Castle Black, is unimpressed. He berates John for being tired of kicking ass and calls him Lord Snow. Thorna seems to hate his life, his job, and most of all, new recruits. John also despises the other new recruits because they're poor fighters and mostly criminals, so John walks alone. At one point, he prophesizes that soon he will forget what it feels like to be warm, so there's that. John broods about how unfair his life is and that only Tyrion told him about the truth about the Watch. He remembers his uncle dismissing any thought of him joining or arranging, telling him that he must earn his way. As John watched Benjen leave, he had a vision of Benjen lying dead, his blood red in the snow, and John wondered what he was becoming. I don't think that was really the same, like, what am I becoming? But anyway. John then begins reminiscing about his family, especially Arya. He is then approached by Gren and his friends. Gren lets John know he may have broken his arm, and John, not having any social grace or etiquette, rudely offers to break the other one to even it up. Not believing what they just heard, they take a step closer to him to hear him better. They compliment John by saying he makes them look bad. John again insults them by saying they look bad before he even met them. Again, thinking they must have heard him wrong, they take a step even closer. John then goes for his sword, and to protect themselves, they grab him. Toad then makes conversation to defuse the situation. He asks John if his mouth was like his mother's, and inquires about who his mother was, what was her profession. He was curious whether he might have known her or not. Instead of using his words and explaining his mother's a sore subject and he would rather not talk about it, his evil bastard wolf blood boils over and he lashes out at them and attacks them. Donald Noy, the blacksmith, breaks up the fight and sends all but John away. Noy explains to John that no matter how bad he thinks his life is or has been, almost everyone on the wall has probably had worse. He calls John a bully and tells him that he will need friends to survive. We then get that Noy fought with Robert and was his blacksmith until he lost his arm and took the black. He was the creator of Robert's Warhammer. So anything to say about any of that?
That was a beautiful summary.
Yeah, I appreciate
it. I thought you'd like it, Tanya.
So does that mean, so because John is a prophet and he saw Benjen lying in the snow dead or whatever, does that confirm that Benjen is dead?
Yep.
John is a prophet.
I think it has to, right?
Confirmed.
Yeah.
It confirms that Benjen is Dario, right?
Yeah, because, like, yeah, absolutely.
Benjen is not Dario.
Benjen is Dario. You never see them together.
Euron is Dario. We all know.
Euron is Dario. Benjen is up in the air.
Never see them together. So this is proof.
Right.
Yeah, but you never see, like, my mum and Benjen together. My mum's not.
Maybe your mum.
Maybe.
Your dad is Benjen.
How also, can you know for sure?
Do you all think Benjen is coming back?
Well, I think he has to. I don't know why I think he has to.
But if no, I think he's dead.
I think he's dead.
He still might come back.
That doesn't mean he can't come back, though.
Being the Night's King.
I don't think he'd be the Night's King. It just doesn't seem right, but I guess he could be. I
mean, he could come back as a knight or something.
I mean, because when you think about it, because I mean, if the Night's King obviously is meant to be an important character, then it. I mean, you think it would be better than if he just be some random fellow, that it would be someone like Benjen, given that he has disappeared and nobody knows where he is. It could work.
Wouldn't the previous Night King be still around instead of Benjen?
Right, the 13th Lord Commander one.
He's not there, that's it.
Maybe.
You think?
Maybe.
It's all possible. We don't know enough about it to decide.
God damn it. When's the next book coming out?
You're going to be really disappointed when you don't get the answer even then.
Right.
I think it's going to be one of those mysteries that just isn't solved in the books. Like, not everything can be tied up, and some things will be ambiguous, and whatever happened to Benjen will be one of them.
They'll show it on the show.
What is this show you speak of?
Even if they don't address it in the books, I bet they'll show it in the show.
Does that make it canon?
Nope, but
exactly.
It'd be something. So, John leaves and we get a brief description of the wall. It's 700 feet tall, wide enough for a dozen men to ride abreast, and can only be defended from the north. Just for fun, a few structures that are shorter than the wall include, obviously, the Great Wall of China, which is 675 feet shorter. The Tower of Pisa is 517 feet shorter. The Taj Mahal is 460 feet shorter. And the Great Pyramid of Giza is 245 feet shorter. So
pretty big.
Two of those were for burials.
Well, I guess you want to defend the thing you...
I was just going for straight up.
How tall is Hadrian's Wall? I guess we never...
Not tall
never...
at all, is it? It's pretty short, isn't it? It's like 20 feet tall, right?
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't think it's significant.
Well, the Great Wall of China is only 25 feet tall.
The Romans just should have tried harder. Anyway, back to the chapter.
Okay. He meets up with Tyrion, and Tyrion explains that if you armor yourself in words people use to attack you, they can't hurt you anymore. And as they walk to dinner, John tells Tyrion he sleeps in an abandoned tower, and we get a commentary on how far the watch has fallen. They talk about Benjen being gone for too long and how lots of rangers have gone missing lately, and John remembers his vision of Benjen and is embarrassed. At dinner, Alistair comes to summon John for Lord Mormont. Tyrion semi-threatens Alistair and gets out of him why Mormont wants to see John. And John runs up to get the message because it's about Bran, and he finds out his brother woke up and he will live. So he runs to tell Tyrion, and because Tyrion's his only friend. And John, being in his first good mood ever, offers to help Gren train. Alistair, not happy with this development, makes a quip about having a better chance of teaching a direwolf to juggle. John looks into the future and sees that he will teach Gren, so he quips back that he would love to take that bet because he would love to see Ghost juggle. Everyone has a good laugh at Alistair's expense, and he tells John before he walks out, that was a grievous error. And then John crosses making an enemy out of Alistair Thorne off his bucket list. And that's the end of the chapter.
So, reading this chapter, he said, like, there was only other words, like, he didn't read. What were the other words?
I don't know, probably was talking about how he was not going to be able to walk anymore.
Yeah, I don't know, probably just general information.
Do you think it wouldn't have been anything about the plot against, like, to kill Bran, because I don't think they would have put that in there, right? Yeah, so Bran is crippled, and John doesn't even care, because he'll live. But he already knew that, because he prophesied it early in the book.
I always thought the scene was, like, really, really, like, cute, like, with John, where he's, like, running around, like, telling the guards, like, he's gonna live! I thought that was a really cool image, and it was one of the few moments where John is.
Yeah, he, like, runs up to Gren and them, and he's like, my brother's gonna live! And then, like, you stay away, you bastard!
Yeah. I'll teach you about how to not get your hand broken. It's great. Everything's great. Isn't the world wonderful?
How do you guys feel about Ned and his parenting and just sending John to the Wall, not really explaining to him what it's going to be like, or even Benjen when he's him on visits? It does feel remiss that the first person who's really told him the truth about this is Tyrion. And I was kind of thinking to myself, what was Ned's motivation? I mean, as much as we always think that Catelyn doesn't like John, is it that Ned also maybe just found him a little bit inconvenient and wants him off at the Wall? Just get rid of him a little bit? Or am I being too harsh?
I guess he just didn't see another option. Because what else? Because he can't really leave him in Winterfell, and he can't really take him to court. So
it's also again about John's protection, right? As in, like, the reason why. I mean, okay, provided we all do agree that R plus L is equal to J.
No.
Does...
Whoa.
No, there isn't consensus on that.
No, I hate that theory. Probably true, but I hate it. But
I mean, at least I think that. I mean, because I believe that, I think that it's possible, it's quite likely that he was more than willing to do that, because at the Wall, John's potential parentage is never even going to be an issue. It's not going to be a problem which is ever going to arise. It could potentially have worked out best for him that way. And...
Yeah, I agree. Like, if Ned's main aim is to, like, keep him away from Robert or keep his parentage unknown to Robert, then the Wall is a good place for him to be, because...
And in some way, it also still allows them to maintain that Stark tradition of always having someone there. And, you know, he doesn't have to end up sending either Rickon or Rob. I mean, like, it's not obviously a hard and fast rule, but it's obviously sort of a tradition that there's a Stark kind of at the Wall. Technically, it still works. So he's got Jon there, so he's able to do that and keep Jon safe. So
send Bran up there. He's not good for anything else. He can climb up the Wall.
Well, it wasn't Ned's idea to send him to the Wall, was it? He just went along with the plan. It was more like Benjen talking about it and John, like, thinking it would be a good idea for himself.
Yeah,
right?
the Maester brought it up when him and Kat were talking about it. And she's like, oh, the perfect idea. She would have kissed him or something like that.
Well, I think it makes sense. I mean, John really doesn't have a place anywhere else as a bastard. I can understand why it wouldn't be an issue for Ned. And Ned might not have as much of a sense of what the Night's Watch is actually like. I don't know. I mean, he probably visits, but he probably has some kind of more idealism still sort of like baked into his impression of it.
Yeah, I'm sure he sees going to the wall as kind of an honorary thing in a way.
Right.
Well. Maybe he knows that it's not that like fairy tale.
Because obviously Benjen would have probably had a much better time at the wall than most other recruits would. So
yeah.
Right.
Benjen himself probably hasn't really even seen how bad it can get. So
well, that when you make a decision, like I'm sure Ben decided to go to the wall, you're not going to come back and be like, oh, that was the worst mistake of my life. I shouldn't have done that. You're going to be like, yeah, things are hard, but it's all right.
Yeah, there's this effect in psychology. There are studies on this where people, like, the more something costs you, the more you like it, just because you kind of have to rationalize for yourself.
Do you guys have any theories about why Benjen would have gone to the wall? It's something I think about sometimes.
We discussed it earlier that it was because he didn't protect Lyanna and they sent him to the wall.
he let her get kidnapped.
I mean, well, you could potentially, if you're thinking why Benjen... I mean, it's actually an interesting one because technically you would think they wouldn't have sent Benjen given that that Brandon had died. It's a bit of a strange decision that they actually sent Benjen to the wall, given that he would, at least probably when he was taking the plaque, he would at that time he would have technically been Ned's heir. So it is actually quite a strange one.
Right.
That
Rob might have been born by then.
Yeah.
They had the Stark's line standing on a baby, and it's a little risky.
Yeah, it is a little risky. Trusting that the baby's going to live.
He wasn't born when Brandon died. He was born shortly afterward, but he wasn't born when Brandon died, so it would have been important to have that heir. But the question is, when did Benjen get sent to the wall? When did that happen?
Is it mentioned in the first book?
Yeah, do we find out later? Does anyone know?
I don't think we really know.
I don't think we know.
I think it must have happened during around the War of the Five, or not War of the Five Kings, the Robert's Rebellion period. I always pictured it as some kind of like noble exile for something he did. That's always how I thought it, and I guess it could be something with Lyanna, some kind of shame about her death, I think, might have been what motivated it.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would send one of the brothers to war during the War of the Five Kings if there weren't some reason of shame, because surely you need as many kind of people to fight for you and to lead armies for you as you can get.
Well, it wasn't the War of the Five Kings.
You know what I mean. If there's a rebellion, you need your people with you, so to say.
They call him the young pup, so I'm sure that it was the same thing as like Renly.
Right, he was too young to fight.
Yeah.
I don't know then. But he was at the tourney at Harrenhal, and he was old enough to be there, I guess. I don't know how old he is.
Was he younger than Lyanna?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
He's the youngest. Hmm.
Okay, I mean, I think someone has pulled out that it's mentioned sometime that Benjen was the Stark in Winterfell during the war, but...
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, which then, yeah, so once the war is over, it would be a bit strange for him to be sent. Well, I mean, we don't know, so it's fine, I guess. Till such time.
It didn't take him really very long to become First Ranger for someone to say that, you have to earn your place here. And, like, 10 years later, he's First Ranger.
Doesn't take long for John to become commander.
Well, yeah, everybody's dead though.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Because as they say, the Rangers don't like Corrin Halfhand himself says, right? The Rangers don't normally survive very long.
Oh, true.
For a succession of first Rangers who died before, and then Benjen was just basically, I guess, the next one around.
He's like, yeah, I don't want it.
Yeah.
John feels if the wall topples, it'll be the end of the world.
Probably.
Sounds like a prophecy, doesn't it?
How do you think that prophecy is going to manifest itself, White Raven?
If the wall topples, it'll be the end of the world.
What, the books just come to an end? It's just total existential.
Sharp analysis there.
Danny comes with her dragons and burns everything to the ground, and that's the end of the books.
Yes.
It could be like a hypothetical, like the end of the world as they know it type of thing. You guys, maybe John isn't a prophet. I know that's probably not possible, but it is possible.
I think the wall is going to come down. It'll be the end of the Seven Kingdoms, but I don't think that's controversial.
It'll be the end. You could think about it as being potentially like a sign of the end of the world as they know it, because like the wall is one of the constants, or it's one of the things which is built almost into the fabric of the Seven Kingdoms and Westeros for how many thousands of years. And something that goes down, you would think that people would consider that to be kind of almost the end. I mean, when you have an event like that, when it changes the fundamental nature of what you've had as part of your world, you
right.
Probably what he means there.
I wonder if
maybe.
I mean, if the wall falls, How long before people in King's Landing even find out about it?
Well,
I mean, are they going to be whites at the neck?
Depending on
then?
If Littlefinger is producing the information, right?
I mean, it also depends like what the situation is on the wall when that happens. Like, if information can get out, depending on like the level of chaos that is occurring at the time.
Well, they might just get a whole bunch of ravens that don't have anything on
there. I sort of feel it would be a little bit like the comet.
Sam,
it would be an event
again
that would be heard through the areas. Like, you'd see it from a distance, and like the news would trickle out from the villages to the towns of the north and south. Like, it would be so cataclysmic. No?
I mean, I don't even know how long these people would live if the wall came down. I just picture just waves of dead things coming across if the walls are down and just killing everybody, I guess.
Yeah, hard home.
John doesn't know this at the time, right? When he goes, when he's discussing this. I mean, so I thought we're looking at it in the context of him being, of John as in at this time, thinking this, rather than John later, once he knows about the White Walkers, thinking about it. Isn't...
Well, that's why he's a prophet. He doesn't know about that, but he can still see it in the future.
Okay. Anything else on that chapter? Otherwise, we can move on to the next chapter. So in the straightforward reread, the next chapter is Ned 4, which we did last week, where Ned and Kat meet in King's Landing. But in the linear reread, we go straight back to the wall to Tyrion 3, which I believe is Aelys.
Yep, so still on the wall, we have Tyrion enjoying a last dinner with the high officers of the Night's Watch. Alistair has nothing but harsh words for him, so Tyrion fights him off with a crab fork. Mormont intimates the unfortunate state of the Night's Watch to Tyrion and says that they're pretty much fucked if they can't get more men to guard the wall. Mormont fears that something dark is coming, and even though Tyrion does not believe him, he promises to help in whatever way he can. On his way to his bed, Tyrion is seized by the urge to stand atop the wall one last time. There he meets Jon and Ghost on watch duty. The two walk together and speak of small things, and Tyrion tells Jon he will stop at Winterfell on his way south. He promises to render the newly awoken Bran whatever aid he can. They speak of Benjen and his lost party, and as the cold night wind blows and the wolves howl beyond the wall, Tyrion feels that he could almost believe their talk of others. Almost. So there you have it. Our last scene we get with Tyrion on the wall before he goes off south for fun adventure.
Mm-hmm. Is, Tyrion the only person Alistair ever challenges to a duel?
I guess on his own person, yeah.
It's very cowardly.
Because he gets basically, a lot of people pick on him or talk shit about him, but I think Tyrion's the only one who's like, oh, say that with a steel in your hand. I think Alistair's probably a pretty poor fighter.
Well, it's Alistair who challenges Tyrion, I think, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean, though. I don't see him ever challenge Jon or anything like that.
Right,
he's not like,
see,
you think you're good, bastard? We'll see how good you are. You know, he never says that.
Yeah, he seems... I mean, I'm sure he's a fine fighter, but he definitely seems a little cowardly, for sure.
Well, he was a Targaryen loyalist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And
that's why he's at the wall.
In the chapter, they said that, like, his head would look good upon a pike or something.
No, it's the other guy that he said his head.
Jeremy Riker.
Upon a pike? Upon a fish? Do you mean a spike?
Yes, upon a fish. Well, they're pikes too, aren't they? They mount them on pikes, isn't that?
Well, I mean,
yeah, I thought so.
I mean, I think it's head spikes in the books in terms of what they put it would be a spike. Yeah, but yeah, you could mount a head on a pike as well.
On a fish?
Yes, on a fish.
On the fish as well, I'm sure, you know, you could probably find a way. You know,
the ultimate insult. Not only did they chop off my head,
they put it on a fish.
You know,
probably what the phrase would do to Edomir if they caught him.
Yeah, exactly.
Cut off his head and sew it to a fish.
Sorry.
Is Mormont really this naive about like Alistair? Like,
no,
thinking that he's a good thing?
I think he fully recognizes that he's not a good dude, but like he says, like he's so desperate, he needs every knight he can get, and he's a knight, so he needs him.
Just because he's a knight doesn't mean he's a good trainer. I mean, Mormont should take up the training or something, you know, just somebody who's competent.
Yeah, there are other people that apparently... He does that eventually, right? He does replace him, doesn't he?
He sends him away because...
No.
Yeah, he does.
No, Jon sends him away.
No.
Mormont sends him away to take the hand to King's Landing.
Is it strange, like, Mormont refuses to let Jon go? Is that because he fears, like, Jon won't come back if he leaves? Because he hasn't said his vows yet. He's not...
Right.
He's not...
He basically again, says that.
Right. Like, he says he wants to. They need to forget their old homes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They can't be off going to other places as soon as they get to the wall, or they're not going to learn what it's like to live on the wall.
To me, it's kind of like when you go to boarding school and it's homesickness, and they always say, like, don't have visits from your family too much in the first term because you've kind of got to get over the homesickness and it's just going to remind you of home. Like, once you've been in a term, then you can have all the visitors to get you want and all the leave you want. But, you know, to me, actually,
well, some of us quite went to public school.
Public school in England is boarding school, but anyway. But, yeah, so to me, it just felt like astute psychology on the part of the commander.
I'm just wondering if John had left and he decided I'm not going back, there's no issue with that, right? Because he hasn't taken his vows yet. He's not sentenced to be there. So he could just be like...
Oh, yeah, he could have left at this point, but he didn't want to.
And Rob would have been like, well, he probably wanted to, but Mormont didn't want him to. Because I would have think like Rob would have been like, oh, God, John, yes, yeah, stay. Because Catelyn's not there to be like, no, you have to tell that bastard to leave.
But I don't think John wanted to admit that he was giving up at this point. I think he was still committed to the idea of being a Night's Watch member.
Probably. And he didn't know Catelyn wasn't at Winterfell, so... And is it strange that Mormont has never told Ned about all his fears?
My impression is just that the commander is just being... I don't think he's being selfish insofar as he thinks if John goes back home, he won't come back and I've lost a good recruit. I think he's just being mindful of John's emotions, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think he's already, like, putting John as Lord Commander because he says, like, 90% of the people can't read. Like, no one, like, we're not getting any good recruits besides, like, rapers and thieves.
So you're saying that Mormont's a prophet, too? Can we confirm this?
Okay, yeah.
He does dream about it.
Mormont's a prophet, too.
There we go.
Let's go with that.
But you did miss, like, John's prophecy in this chapter where John says, tell Rob I'm going to command the Night's Watch and keep him safe.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Yeah.
I know you're tracking these things, Brett. You're on it.
Damn. Nailed it.
I wonder if he had taken up needlework instead of taking up a sword, if Rob would still be alive. Like, he tells him he might as well take up needlework and have his sword melted down for horseshoes.
I mean, maybe
that
would
have kept him safe. Huh?
That never happened since he's the heir apparent in Winterfell. Like that would never happen.
No.
Unfortunately.
When Aemon says about Tyrion that he's a giant come among us, what does he mean?
Another prophecy. I don't know. It's interesting, especially with the pet name he gets with Shae. I'm not sure though what exactly his specific name is.
Also, Aemon says no one said I've been kind before either.
I don't know why that's funny.
I thought it was funny. Right? I mean, just it's like a thing you don't expect from like Aemon, right? He makes his own quip on Tyrion's own comment.
All right, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I feel like Aemon is kind,
right?
It's making a joke.
I guess. I think what he means by a giant joke is I think he's like mentally he's a giant.
Right,
them.
Yeah, he's got a big mind.
Maybe he's saying it for similar reasons as Jay, and there's something going on that we don't know about.
Right,
it can
yeah.
be our crackpot theory of the...
Targaryen.
Well, I did wonder, like, would he maybe have, like, some spidey sense that there was a fellow Targ in the house? Or...
That's what I
Then he wouldn't sense it about Jon?
Well, maybe he senses it about John, but he's just keeping quiet.
Or
maybe John is not a Targ.
Yeah, I was saying John's not one of them.
Well, he does talk to John about his Targaryen life, so I mean, he could have sensed that too.
Yeah, I suppose.
John also says in this chapter, if Ben doesn't come back, Ghost and I will go find him. Now, obviously they haven't done that.
So combined with the other chapter, that means that Ghost and John are going to find Benjen's corpse. Oh no, but John is dead.
I wonder if it's John inside of Ghost.
Maybe all the Star Wars stuff, but it just reminded me of Empire Strikes Back when like Han Solo goes to find Luke when he's caught by the snow monster in the first bit. Yeah, I'll be quiet now.
Also, John inside of Ghost sounds gross.
Thought they spelled bad on the outside. Any thoughts, I guess, on the exchange between him and John? Not a lot happens, I guess. I guess I just really like that friendship. I don't know. It's interesting that these two characters that seem so far apart have this one moment together before all their hijinks that comes later. I just like that moment in the story.
Do you think they're going to meet again at some point?
I'd like for them to.
I mean, John is coming back, like, but hypothetically.
Right, yeah, I think he's coming back.
Yeah, dead.
He totally. Anyway.
So unlikely at this point.
This is completely unrelated. This is unrelated, but do you think Bran inside of Hodor could say something else?
Oh, I don't know.
Brandor?
Well, I was just thinking, like, Jon's wolf never makes a sound, and I wonder if, when he's warged inside of him, if he could, like, make a howl or something like that?
I think he could.
I guess that depends on why, like, those are two very different things, right? Because Hodor cannot, like, he would be physically able to say something. He just, because he's mentally not able to, but seeing as Bran would be mentally able to say something else, and the physical possibility is there. But with Ghost, we don't know why he doesn't.
Maybe Ghost is just retarded.
I love the fact that we have someone on the podcast.
Oh, don't use that word.
Ghost may just have a speech impediment, and therefore physically is incapable of saying.
Yeah, he's physically incapable of making any. Yeah, that's kind of my point. If he's physically.
I mean, the Wagger would be kind of constrained by the Wargies.
He howls when John gets stabbed in dance. Is that what you said?
Yeah, or a bit before.
Does he? Oh, that's crazy. I never even thought of that. If John did warg into him, he might howl.
Is that proof of the warging
theory?
We just proved proved that theory now.
if that's real, I mean, I don't know if that really happened. That did happen though.
I just have to check dance. Does anyone have dance on them right now?
Kay Centurion would know this shit. Oh, actually, I have my iPad here. I can get the ebook version. Okay, you guys talk amongst yourselves.
You're not gonna buy it, are you? You already have.
No, I already have it. So I've got one howling.
Yeah, that's what I remember from the chapter.
Maybe John went and
John twisted for the knife.
Maybe.
For the watch. In the cold night air, the wound was smoking. Ghost, he whispered. Pain washed over him. Stick them with a pointy end. When the third dagger took him between the shoulder blades, he gave a grunt and fell face first into the snow. He never felt the fourth knife, only the cold. ...
That's where it ends.
Yeah, but I might have missed it. Let me just have
But no, I mean, I remember Wundun sort of howling.
He was getting attacked. That's what brought them to the area.
Yeah. That's why he ripped apart
Sir Patrick.
Whoever
the cowboy's guy.
Cowboy was.
Yeah, Sir Patrick.
Yeah, I'm just probably rereading the final page when this start coming for him. Well, yeah, I can't find it.
Okay. Mm.
Okay. Alas.
Alas.
We'll have to
Damn it.
For now.
I was really sure he's present.
Maybe it's John's fanfic, Valkyrie's fanfic you're thinking of.
Maybe.
Well, I know, like, when Bran falls, his wolf howls, that happens. I don't know.
That certainly happens.
In fact, Ghost isn't sort of... I mean, it has John whispering Ghost, but it doesn't sort of show you Ghost, or... Ghost isn't
could
sort
be
of...
howling, Ghost and that is... could potentially satisfy it, though we don't know for sure.
Yeah. Ghost is locked up in his room.
That's five books away, let's... deal with that when we
I'm
get
sorry
back.
It's just
yeah in about
important.
Like 15 years when this reread gets to Dance with Dragons.
All right, right, read your Arya bullshit.
Okay, so I think it's just the next linear chapter, right? Arya 2.
Yep.
Okay,
sure. Arya's been fighting with her sister and Septa Mordain. She runs away and her father comes and he's like, we all have to stick together. Hold on.
Oh, you're really slimming this one down.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
No, it's good. It's good. It's good.
Concise.
Well, there's no rules for this stuff. I mean, East Texas Direwolf is the master of summarizing something in great detail. So, you know, it is what it is. Personal style.
Okay. So, personal style. great... parts of this chapter is that Ned is like, oh, Arya, yeah, the same kind of thing as Lyanna and Brandon, and they both went to the grave too young, and then he got her a fencing master in 3 days, which I don't understand.
Maybe he's already there.
Yeah, but why is he there?
He's a faceless man. He can be whatever he wants, right?
I mean, to be honest, why would he not be there? I mean, there would always be work for someone like him in a place like King's Landing. So.
Yeah, but he was like the first sword of Braavos for years.
But not anymore, man.
And then all of a sudden, like 3 days later, like, oh yeah.
Well, I don't think he just left the sword of, like, he didn't stop being the sword of Braavos 3 days ago.
He was like, oh, I have a chance to become a dance teacher. I'm going to, like, quit this job now.
I wonder,
I've been on the crackpot theory that the only reason that Sirio came to King's Landing was to teach Arya on the behest of the Faceless Man, because they were training her this early. I'm in.
Well, I am in, too.
It is strange, like, he tells her, like, you are a sword, that is all. You know what I mean? Like, that's what he says to her. It's weird. It's really? Like, girl, boy, it doesn't matter. You're a sword, that is all. That's very Faceless Man-ish.
Or you could just be progressive, you know?
Uh-huh. Maybe.
It's like, you know, let's do away with these patriarchal notions of who can fight and can't. Like, it's just, you know.
Yeah, but I think you guys are right. I think there's something very Faceless Man-y about just the way he approaches her and the language that he uses. And of all the crackpot theories, I'm totally willing to believe that Sirio is just one face of, well, Jaqen H'ghar, whoever, you know.
We can come across that when we get there, I guess.
But yeah, in 2018, discuss that.
When would they have decided?
Mark your calendars.
When would they have decided to join Arya?
Yeah, when Winds of Winter comes out.
I don't know how they would have decided it. I don't, like, a lot of it does make sense, I guess, is maybe John told them about it.
That's quite true. But I think they'd have to notice her at some point, for some reason. And she hasn't really done anything remarkable.
Well, maybe that was a prophecy.
Maybe.
By John.
Yeah,
okay.
I also wonder why she never went to look for Nymeria after she got away. Like she says in this chapter, I'd run away and I'd go find Nymeria and we'd get back to Winterfell, but she never looks for her.
Well, maybe she's a bit more realistic about that. And if you think about it, if you look for a wolf that ran away anywhere in the Seven Kingdoms,
Well, they end up in the same area at one point.
Well,
yeah, but she's under the control of, like, the mountain.
Yeah.
What?
Well, the Hound. Under
the control of the mountain.
Brotherhood.
Hound, yeah.
One of those.
No, the yeah.
No, it's when she's running away from
the mountain does capture her at one point, but I don't
right
know where she
it's when she's running away from the Boltons that she crosses paths with them because her pack right. like attacks the people that are following them in the night.
No, her pack attacks the Bloody Mummers.
Oh, is it when the Lannisters are chasing the Night's Watch?
No, she just has this dream that like Zolo the Fat. They eat him and like okay. the rest of Bloody Mummers. And
that
like,
must have happened way later than when she was.
Oh yeah.
No, I do remember there being followed, and she has a dream, and that's one of the things that happens in her dream is the wolves attack the people that are following them.
Yeah, and then the wolf also drags her mother out of the river.
But right, that's much later.
Yeah, that's after the escape from Harrenhal, the first dream you guys are talking about. So yeah, that would have been before she's caught by the Brotherhood and after the mountain.
Okay, fine.
Okay, yeah.
I was just wondering why she never actually thought about it when she got out. Maybe because she's just more realistic at that point.
Maybe.
I just think this chapter's really sad when she's all, he was my friend. And she blames herself for everything. And
well, we have the great thing where it's like, in winter, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives. And obviously for Starks, like, ugh, not so much.
And it also, it foreshadows Arya's own story, right? She is the lone wolf for her.
They all
story.
Are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
None of them are part of a pack at the end. Like, except, like, even Bran and Rickon split up.
To be fair, most of them are alive, though. So it's not going.
Yeah, it's bullshit. That, what are you talking about, Ned?
Yeah, the lone wolf survived. The one with the most people around him died.
Well, I mean, it's good recognition on Ned's part that they're in a place where they have enemies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm joking. It is a good message that they should stick together with so many people around that want to hurt them.
It's just a shame he didn't tell Sansa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do feel like both of them, the perfect thing happened for them to survive. Like, I don't think Sansa would have survived with Arya, and Arya wouldn't have survived with Sansa. Like, if you know, if they had stuck together,
Arya would have ended up killing Sansa. I think, let's be honest.
Well, I don't know if she would have killed Sansa, but she would have like.
She may
tried
still
to kill
end up killing Sansa as an assassination where she's hired for her.
Skills. No way.
Wow, my big theory is she'll be brought back and have to kill someone. And it'll be her family, and that's how she'll be jolted out of her current psychopathy.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just gonna say it because you have
tin hat theory.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say because you have to every time this is brought up.
Logical one, you know.
You can't.
I mean,
kill
of course, given how Gianna probably will end up killing her the family member. You know, I mean, as compared to any other book where she would be jolted out of it, like in Martin's world, she probably will kill the family member.
But actually, yeah. But Alias, you're making a good point, right? That you can't be hired to do that. Is that the point?
Yeah, yeah. You can't kill people you know, right? That's part of the thing.
Mm.
Yeah. So far as we know, right?
Right. They might back off on that rule in this case.
Okay, I'll be quiet.
Maybe like one of their final tests or something. Like, can you kill someone you know? Yes.
That would be badass. But I think you're right. It probably can't happen, which is a shame. Boo.
Right. Okay. Any more tinfoil to throw in here?
Let's see what I've got. Tinfoil cabinet.
I just want to say that Ned's a good leader, even if he's not a good father.
Right. That whole point about him dining with a man and hosting a different man every night at his table, like that's pretty smart.
Yeah, it's just really good management.
Also, does that, like, demark, like, the wars, like, some kind of wars that are going on all the time? Because, like, why would he need so many free riders? Why would he need so many knights? And why would he need, like, God damn it. Why would he need, like, all these fighting men in the north when everything's at peace?
I don't know if there were any kind of, like, during that long summer period after Robert's Rebellion, like, if there were any, like, local disputes or not. Have we heard anything about anything like that?
I mean the Greyjoy Rebellion.
Yeah, the Greyjoy Rebellion.
Yeah, I mean, there's that, yeah.
They'd have to be worried about. And then...
Yeah, just be prepared at all times.
But, like, Jorah Mormont, he had to go take care of that, even though Jorah wasn't there when he got there. But, you know, he could have been like, no, we're packing inside the castle and we're going to fight you off. So I'm sure he had to bring, like, a company of men there.
True.
But isn't it just like, I don't know how the setup was in sort of late medieval times, that, you know, if you were the sort of the regional lord, and then as other people were going about their business, having to journey here and there, then they might sort of pay a call once every year or twice a year just to sort of tell you how it's going in their sub-region sort of thing. I mean, wouldn't there always just be a stream of constant visitors at court,
right?
So to say?
And I think that you always want to have like a castle fully garrisoned, right? There's no reason not to. Just like it's a thing you do, and that's why there are so many men always with them.
Especially in the north, where you're pretty close. I mean, not really close to the enemy, but like if wildlings get over the wall, you're tasked to go take care of it. Whereas when you're in like the Reach, you're not really worried about that sort of thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
Where the knights are more decorative. The Knights of Summer, as of course Catherine puts it.
Mm.
Yeah, just hanging out, eating peaches.
peaches.
And Arya realizes here that it's like that these men can't do anything to help her if things go down. She's on her own.
Yeah. You know, I mean, speaking of the Knights of Summer, we do get here that the tourney is happening, which is pretty cool. Exciting.
For Sansa.
Yep.
And Jane Poole.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Poole was really mean to Arya, telling her that like they chopped up the kid's body and gave it to the butcher and he thought it was a pig. It's like, why would you ever say that to her?
Spiteful little girls, it makes sense, I guess. Just part of being a kid.
I guess. Oh, it seems pretty mean to me.
Yeah, little girls be mean.
They be Hayden.
Oh, dear. Should Ned have condoned her having a sword and gotten her as a fencing master?
I'm fine with it. I don't think it was poor fathering to do so.
Why not?
Why not what?
But she does start killing people with it eventually. I don't know.
Well,
she has to
like,
survive.
Only because she gets thrown into those situations. She doesn't really run around King's Landing and kill people who are nice to her or whatever.
I mean, my gut reaction is like that is to just appreciate it because she's letting her, you know, break out of the social mold and do something that she loves. It makes sense. But yeah, I mean, you do wonder, like, was supporting that some factor? I mean, she probably would have died given what happened, but is supporting, like, her, if she has some kind of tendency towards violence, is that a thing that you should support?
Yeah, just, you know, given where she ends up.
I'm not saying it's a good thing that she's thrown killing a bunch of people, but what's the alternative? I mean, she'd be dead, I guess.
Or... I mean, the alternative is confiscate it. I'm sorry, but...
No, but I mean, you also have the other guy.
No, but like, where she... Sorry.
Go on.
I meant the alternative in terms of where she would be now. Like, where would she end up?
I'm just saying that Ned, from a parenting perspective, like, you know, this is a girl who's been play fighting with this guy and already got into trouble for it with, you know, the ruling power and caused hurt and embarrassment and all sorts of trouble. You get to King's Landing, you discover she has the sword, which I guess, you know, she's still very young. I mean, if you were a parent and you found your kid with that, you wouldn't be like, oh, you managed to get this from your big brother. Let me now get you some fencing lessons. You'd be confiscating it and saying, this isn't for you. You're not old enough. Don't do that again. We'll talk about it. You know, you'd be exerting some authority, wouldn't you?
The old enough thing is really an argument for Ned, I think, because he's like, isn't he in one of the chapters? And he's like, Rickon should grow up. Cause
yeah, but Rickon's a boy.
And he's only three. He's only three,
like,
though.
Yeah, so, and Ned is like, yeah, he should grow the fuck up.
I mean, Arya being who she is, even if none of the bad shit with the Lannisters and everything happened, Arya being who she is not going to be able to, given like how violent the world is compared to Arya's, Arya is not going to be able to survive like a girl normally would, like Sansa does on like her charm and her ability to talk her way out of things. Arya, being who she is, needs a sword to get along in the
world.
But
if the world is now, winter is coming, and Arya needs a sword, then surely Sansa needs a sword, because flowery words are only going to get you so far. I just feel it's a bit inconsistent.
Looking at his daughters is what they are most suited to. And the other thing is, I mean, he also has to be careful that he's trying not to be a bad parent, so he's trying to be a good parent because he knows he's kind of also uprooted these guys and, you know, changed their lives entirely by bringing them here. So, it, you know, they're not with their mother. They there's a lot of things which have changed for them. So I think that may have been part of behind why he's trying to instead let her have, you know, let her keep something from home, which is a gift from her brother, who she's probably rarely ever going to see again. And then there's also the fact that the reason why he gets to the fencing lessons, obviously, is because in some ways he can see that, like, he can either try beating it out of her, but, like, it's not going to go. So at least let her be trained, you know, in a way where she's
right, It's not going to go away, so might as well support it in a positive way.
Yeah,
it
gives her a positive outlet for that.
Yeah, like,
realistically, don't tell your mom.
Realistically, it's not like she wouldn't.
Is someone beating up a saucepan in the background?
Yeah, sorry, I'm trying to mute it.
You wouldn't have
saucepan? You're going about it the wrong way.
Like, I think the best thing is to just support and make sure she gets proper training rather than her going behind his back and doing whatever weird stuff.
I think part of it depends on where he sees her future going. Because, like, right now, while she's in King's Landing, I don't think she really would need to learn how to use a sword. But when she's living, like, if she ends up in the North in the end, it's not a bad skill to have up there. Like, this is court life, so he probably doesn't see it as that big a deal. But where they come from, learning how to use a sword isn't so bad. He even says that if Lyanna had learned to use a sword, maybe it wouldn't have been so bad for her.
I mean, that's another big thing, right? I mean, like, that may also then be at the back of his mind always, knowing that that's something which happened to his sister, you know?
She was in the back of his mind. He does give one of our little clues here where he says that the lie was not without honor.
Right.
So, yeah.
And she doesn't say it's from John either. Like, it's not a sentimental thing why he lets her keep it, because she doesn't rat out John.
Who does she get it from then?
He just says that it's from his own forge, or Mickon's forge, and she won't tell him who gave it to her, because she refuses to rat out.
It's fairly obvious, though, isn't it? I mean...
Not really.
Like, who does she know at Winterfell who's going to have the time and effort to commission a specially designed, but, you know, reduced-sized sword for her?
It could have been Rob, I guess. I don't think anyone else, but it could have been Rob.
Yeah. I think it's fairly obvious, but...
Could have been Septa Mordain, yes.
Yeah, totally.
Yep,
Santa. Charging ladylike habits and, you know.
Probably Rickon, though.
Yeah, Rickon did it. I'm sure Mickon is like, what'd you say, Rickon? Okay, sure, I'll make a sword.
Yep, that's what happened.
There we go.
Okay, anything else on Arya? Okay, so over to the final chapter for today, which is Bran 4 in the linear reread. So we're skipping over a Dany chapter, and actually, like, we're now in... August 298, but that was back in March, so it shows you how the Dany chapters, I guess, have just been sort of sprinkled through the book to be evenly spaced. So unfortunately, Joanna's mic wasn't working very well, so I'm just going to reread her chapter summary. Bran is sitting sadly in his room, wishing he was still able to play outside with Rickon and the wolves. He has been left alone, as most of his family and household members left Winterfell before he awoke from his coma. Old Nan offers to tell him a story, and Bran realizes she is mistaking him for his uncle, or maybe one of the other Brandon Starks. He is somewhat angry at her, and tells her his favorite stories were always the scary ones. So old Nan then starts telling him about the Long Night and the tale of the last hero, but before she can finish the story, she's interrupted by the arrival of Hodor and Maester Luwin. They are there to get Bran, as Tyrion Lannister has come up to talk to him. Tyrion gives him the instructions to build a special, booby-trapped, saddle that will allow Bran to ride again. The wolves then run into the room and attack Tyrion, the Stark brothers having to call them off. Tyrion, who is fully aware Robb mistrusts him and does not want him there, then leaves. Later on, Robb and Bran have dinner with Yoren and other men of the Night's Watch, who tell them about Benjen Stark's disappearance. Both Robb and Bran refuse to believe Benjen is dead. When Robb takes Bran to bed, he promises him they will go visit Jon at the Wall one day, but Bran knows this will likely not happen, and Robb himself is crying.
They said they sent a bird to Bran's mother. How did they do that?
That's a good question, actually. Where did they send it to? I guess send it to King's Landing, right? I don't know.
No, they would never send it to King's Landing because she's not supposed to be there.
The whole idea is to Ned, I guess. I don't know.
Because it's like a secret mission. So where would they send a bird to send it to her?
What revenue?
When they're reading this, is anyone else like, "Hey, Nan, how about you finish your fucking story?"
Seems important. It seems like important information to know.
She's like, "Oh, you come back to him and there they'll be. Oh, Jesus Christ, just finish it."
He's called around Luwin's fault. Now the world is on the end.
Yep. Damn it, Luwin.
How untactful do you think it is of Tyrion to be like, "You Starks are hard to kill"? Come on, Tyrion. Really?
I mean, it's a compliment, I guess. It's a backhanded compliment.
I guess I don't read it as a compliment after someone actually tried to... First he gets... falls slash gets pushed out of a tower, and then someone tries to kill him, and then he says, "You Starks are hard to kill."
I mean he's Tyrion, though, right? That's who he is, and they're already suspicious of Lannisters anyway, so it's not like this is going to make it worse necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah, and he doesn't know that they suspect his family, I guess.
Yeah.
He does, but they don't. He doesn't know that they do.
Right.
Do you guys think the wolves attack him because... like, Rob is suspicious of him, and Grey Wind is kind of like their leader right now?
I guess.
So you think it's like a psychic thing?
It's odd, because there's no reason for Tyrion to be, like, suspicious in the way that we normally think of it, right? The you know, like, Grey Wind's all suspicious of the Westerlings and everything. Like, why is
they know Tyrion something suspicious? About the future, like...
Oh, like way ahead where Tyrion like kills a Stark that we don't even know?
Maybe Grey Wind is a prophet and he had a dream.
Well, even Ghost attacks Tyrion when Jon gets mad at Tyrion. Ghost attacks him.
Right, but that's, I don't know. I guess they do respond to the emotions of the owners. I guess that's
really only Grey Wind attack Tyrion then? Or Grey Wind and Chagatai?
All three of the wolves attack him.
Yeah, but I think Bran was never angry at Tyrion, so
Right. Stannis
doesn't have attacked Tyrion.
But that's what I mean by Grey Wind being the leader. Perhaps they, like, follow his lead. I mean, Shaggy Dog, it doesn't surprise me at all he'd attack him. He'd probably do it just because.
Only one of them actually attacks him, right? One of them, like, bites off his... Which one is that? It bites off clothes.
I'm pretty sure Grey Wind's the first one to go after him.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, that does make sense, Joanna. I'm not sure why Summer would attack, but I guess it fits Brett's idea that they're just following Grey Wind's lead.
And Bran is the first one to call him off.
Yeah.
So he calls off Summer, and then Rob calls off Grey Wind. And then they're like, "Call Shaggy Dog."
And I mean, I guess if we're going like the full, like, full-on empathy link thing, I mean, Bran's emotions were kind of confused at that point. He wasn't fully on Tyrion's side, despite the booby-trapped saddle. He still is, like, wrestling with the whole thing about, like, being called a cripple and everything.
But it seems every other time they attack someone, they have much better reasons to do it.
Yeah,
that's smarter than the humans.
There could be something more going on that we don't even know about Tyrion, but...
They can sense he's a dog.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's why they forced out Ghost, because they could sense he was going to bond with the Targ.
Right, yep. Stand
Maybe Ghost is a dog.
Oh my goodness. I thought it was very telling that it was Bran who called off his direwolf before Rob, and that, you know, Bran in some instinctive ways, even as a young kid, knows that this isn't sensible. And I just find it kind of quite immature of Rob, no matter what you think of Tyrion, you know, this is a lord coming to your court. Even if you think he's guilty and want to plot against him, you're not openly rude to him. I mean,
you don't meet him with an unsheathed sword.
Yeah, I mean, like, what the hell? Like, put it away. He's just all like macho and alpha and just causing issues and problems. It's really immature.
Yeah, there was that, but I think the impression I got was that Rob was just stunned by this. You know, he has the whole point, like, the wolves have never done that before. He just didn't know what to do in that moment. And Bran did, which, you know, speaks to Bran's character, certainly. But I don't think it was purely that he, like, wanted this to happen to Tyrion in that moment.
No, but maybe he feels threatened by Tyrion because he's a Lannister.
Sure.
Because, like I said, ghosts attack Tyrion when he was, like, saying bad things to Jon about the Watch, and Jon's like, it's not true, and then Ghost kind of attacks him.
I don't think level-headed Rob, even this Rob, would, like, all right, let's just murder this guy. This seems
No, fine. I don't think he was ever going to murder him, but I don't think Jon wanted to murder him either.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying that I think Rob was just stunned. I don't think he wanted Tyrion to get killed, and it was just Bran that held him off.
Oh, you mean by not hollering first? Okay.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you can tell Rob is still acting like a boy, though, like, what did the...
He is just a boy, in fairness.
Well, like Roderick told him, like, how many times do I have to tell you, keep your sword sheathed, you know, that kind of thing. And it's the same thing here. Like, he meets him with an unsheathed sword. It's like, that's not the way you conduct business, man.
I don't know. I just feel like, and obviously, completely rightly, Joffrey gets a lot of shit for being a willful, entitled, angry young man. And I'm not saying Rob is remotely on the same level of... evil as Joffrey, but I'm just saying that, you know, these are kids, and this is the first time he's being given authority, and yeah, he's freaked out because his direwolf does this thing, and he overreacts. It's just not sensible. But it is what it is, I guess.
I mean, you have to also give some credit to the fact that, I mean, they obviously, you know, things aren't pleasant between, haven't exactly been pleasant between the families, and with the whole, all the assassination attempts and everything on Bran, everyone's on edge, right? So, I mean, it's understandable that the Rob would not quite be thinking entirely clearly. He is, after all, at the end of the day, what, 14 at this time?
Yeah, and he has that information that he believes strongly that the Lannisters are the ones that cause things. Yeah.
So, I mean,
try to kill Bran.
That's going to be playing on his mind as well. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else in this chapter?
I really like that last moment with Bran and Rob. We don't get a lot of like, brotherly moments like that in the series, and it definitely goes away a lot really fast as the books go on, and so it's nice to have that sort of like tender moment between these two, afraid of what's to come, and just to have a little moment with them. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the tragedy of the book, isn't it? Like, this is a genuinely nice and loving family. If you discount the sort of, okay, there's bickering between Sansa and Arya, but if you discount the sort of Jon Cat thing, as a family unit of Starks, they're probably the most well-adjusted family in Westeros in some way. And you just see
it. I think the Tyrells are probably pretty well-adjusted.
Well, they're maybe. They seem to have their own problems. Yeah.
Huh. We don't see them enough as a family. Like, we see the Starks.
Yeah, true. We see more of the Starks at the start. But it always struck me that they were quite a nice family, and, you know, it just felt that was one of the tragedies of the book was, you know, in peacetime they would have all been fine, and no, war happens and they get scattered. Anything else?
I mean, you do also look at the fact that it's not even it's not exactly obviously wartime yet, but like it's about how, I mean, they sort of start becoming separated like well before the war is even on the horizon. You know, so I mean, it's I guess an interesting take on the fact that like even when, because Martin has always said that, you know, the whole thing is that even in peacetime, even after you've won against who the people are supposed to be the bad guys, that doesn't mean your fight is over and doesn't mean everything's just going to be hunky-dory. So
yeah, it's also it's also like a really interesting I don't know, like growing up in this world thing, like even if war isn't happening, like just like bad stuff is going to happen in your life, you know. I mean, obviously, this is part of the whole war situation with Bran getting crippled, but that bad thing happens. Part of their family has to go to court because that's part of being a lord, is you have to go do that. And yeah, it's just like, this is part of growing up, and it kind of sucks for them.
Ned kind of touches on that in the Arya chapter, where he's like, winter is coming, and we've seen the beginning of it already. Mm-hmm. And basically to them, winter is hard times.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Is there anything that comes up, because I thought Ulf Gator made a really good point in the forums, is there anything that we learn later in the books pursuant to these chapters that we now know? Sort of
nothing that we remember.
Nothing that we remember.
No, I guess just there's a lot of foreshadowing in these chapters, and we love to dress it up as like John's a prophet, people are prophets and whatnot, but yeah, there's a lot of foreshadowing for what's to come, which I guess just says to me like a lot of this was planned ahead of time. And
I think, for instance, there's a part at the end of this last Bran chapter where when they're discussing, where, you know, Bran's had the thing of, oh, he's scared about, like, where he's thinking of Benjen being hounded by the White Walkers and everything. And then he's like, but the children will help him, basically.
Right.
Sorry. I think that's, again, like a massive bit of foreshadowing on what's actually going to happen to Bran, you know, at the end.
I love that line by Yoren there, where he's like, who can say what's alive and dead beyond the wall?
I can just see him when, like, Rob pulls out his sword. He's like, he's not dead, you hear me? And he's just like, I can see him cocking an eyebrow and being like, oh, okay. Because I don't know how he'd take that.
Do you think the last hero story foreshadows Summer dying?
Summer dying?
Because all his friends die and the dog dies.
Right, huh?
Yeah, everybody dies.
Do you think Bran is the last hero in this time?
He's the one who went to meet the children of the forest, so.
Right. Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, I don't know if Bran's on the right side.
That is a question, right? Bloodraven, what is his plan? It's tricky.
What's his plan, eh? Yeah, and it's like, is Melisandre
on the side? Are you Canadian with the A?
Our references are well above you, Matt. I'm sorry.
I actually think that I would put a higher chance of Melisandre being on the side of good, even if slightly incompetently, than Bloodraven. I
don't know.
I don't trust Bloodraven as far as he can fly.
Why do you guys specifically not trust Bloodraven? Like, do you guys have any specific things, or is it just more a sense of, you know, vague guns?
Because he stalks people.
Well, he keeps trying to get them killed. I mean, he sent the wolves out, and then what do the wolves do? They try to bite it. A bunch of Lannisters. So.
Damn it, Bloodraven.
So they were trying to get the kids killed. Like, Arya almost lost her hand because of it. And they tried to attack Tyrion twice.
Oh, interesting.
I don't really believe that, just so you know. I was making that up on the fly.
Nice.
Oh, I thought everything you say is always 100%
serious. Yeah, me too.
Huh.
I mean, he's a generally sketchy guy. I guess that is an element to it. Like you were saying, like, just stalking everybody. That's his deal. So, I don't know.
We also haven't seen him do anything.
Fair. Like, he's kind of incapable of more anything else.
We haven't seen him do anything that would make him look like a good guy, I guess.
Except for send the wolves to the Starks. Wink!
There's the way he killed that Blackfyre guy in the World of Ice and Fire. The one who wanted to go to the council. Can't remember the name.
Does anyone remember?
Nope. That's the way I am with all of Ice and Fire. I can't remember the name.
Shocking lack of knowledge.
So I have something to ask that isn't really related to these chapters, but whatever. I've been reading this book about castrati, which are opera singers who have their nuts chopped off. And it got me thinking about Varys, because nobody ever in the books mentions that he has a high-pitched voice. But his testicles were taken out, like, pre-puberty, right? So shouldn't that be something people comment on? Or are they just...
Do we know that?
Or are they just so down with the whole thing that they're just too cool to mention it?
Does Kevin...
He has a feminine voice, doesn't he? Isn't that remarked upon, that he has a feminine voice?
Is it? Okay, well, maybe it's just me, like, misremembering in that case.
I thought the chapter where Kevin dies says something about his voice. I don't know.
I mean, it's confusing, especially, like, with the show with, like, Conleth Hill has a very deep voice, so that might be distorting our memory. But I'm pretty sure that in the book he's supposed to have a pretty high voice, I think.
Maybe since he was a mummer, he can change his voice a bit and not so high key.
But I thought it's...
But he also changes his voice a lot.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
So I guess what I want to know, and maybe it's a question for the podcast doctor, is that once you have your testicles taken out, can you...
And he would know.
Oh, boy.
So you you basically don't go through puberty in the same way, so you don't, your voice doesn't deepen. Can you physically lower your voice as a mama to do sort of big baritone voices? Would, like, isn't there just a lower pardon?
Would you still develop an Adam's apple?
Don't think so. Because in this book, they talk about how it manifests in other physical ways, like your jaw takes a weird shape and you often get osteoporosis. There's all sorts of weird softened impacts to the body. Yeah, exactly. So,
We need experts. We need experts to report.
We need experts on castration. If anyone is an expert on castration, please come on the next podcast.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a really high-pitched voice. Maybe he needed this as a child. He had, like, a normal voice, and then he can practice and sound like not as high-pitched as people would think.
Why do we care about this? Are we thinking he might not be a eunuch, or, like, what's the...
We're trying to predict how successful his singing career will be. So.
All right.
Yeah, you know, when all his political scheming goes to shit, you know, will he have a successful career? No, I mean, it was just me just wondering.
If you're going by the audiobooks, he has a high-pitched voice. He's always like...
How was that?
You heard it.
I didn't
hear it. Or Dutrice's Varys voice. Bad memories.
Yeah, it's not great.
But that, to me, I think is probably more realistic. I'm just surprised in the show they didn't kind of do that. But anyway. Okay.
Wait a minute. What's wrong with the show?
What's not wrong with the show?
Of all the things wrong with the show, that's by far...
Don't talk about it, man.
Not the most wrong.
Oh, boy.
Okay, so has anyone got anything else to say about these chapters or anything else random concerning eunuchs?
I don't know as if I've ever met one.
That's all I have to say about eunuchs today.
Matt, you've met Lioncom. What are eunuchs like?
Oh, boy. They drink heavily, and yeah, they're okay with me.
Try to forget their loss, yeah.
Well, in that case, thank you all for podcasting. It remains for me to say that the next episode will cover the capture of Tyrion. So if you want to read along at home, it's the first half of September 298. It's Ned 5, John 4, Cat 5, Tyrion 4, and Ned 6. So if you would like to get involved, then you should sign up to the forums of A Podcast of Ice and Fire, and you can work out when we schedule stuff and join in, and that would be awesome.
Ooh, that's cool. All right, then.
Anyway, this has been awesome and fun, and thanks to everyone for joining.
But this was quite a lot of fun, and I hope I will be able to do this again with you guys on a more regular basis.
Cool.
All right.
For joining.
Yeah, welcome.
Nice talking to you, man.
Yep, you too. All right, good night.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Peaches come from a can.
Did you guys like Rachel last night?
Yeah, no, I had my flat warming party last night.
Flat warming. Europeans are adorable.
Hmm? What's weird? Don't you have flats?
We don't call them that.
Yeah, we call them apartments.
Oh, okay.
Really? Oh, that's weird.
They're not flat, are they? Are they flat? Nerds.
Yay. Excited? And special guest, Amber Rocks.
Well, a special guest?
Oh, sorry, I was muted. Hello.
Hello.
I didn't think you had started already. I was just going to do my private podcast trick, live podcasting. I'm not here. Cut this
you got
out.
That?
I'm not here. I just wanted to say hi to Joe.
Hello.
Hi. And everybody else.
Yeah, because we don't feel slighted now.
I've never talked to her before.
It's whatever.
So are you actually joining the podcast, Amber, or?
No. I'm totally not. I'm going to go walk my dog. But there's something really incredible about listening to a podcast as it's happening, because it feels exactly like listening to a podcast any other time.
Except for you get all the edited parts.
So you're like a podcast voyeur.
Lurker, I think, is the term. Yeah.
Do you do this a lot?
Creepers.
No.
Yeah.
Not as often as Zach.
What are you talking about? I don't do that.
Is this a whole subculture I had no idea about?
Just a teeny tiny thing.
And who else does this apart from you and Zach?
We might be the only ones. Nerds.
So, Tanya,
it's a house now, not a flat?
Well, it's a flat within a house.
What?
Exactly.
Why is this so complicated?
Nerds.
Kevin Costner's Robin Hood, it's like 3 feet tall.
That's probably accurate.
Yeah, that's crazy because I just watched that today.
Nice.
I shit you not. That is weird that you said that. Get out of my head. All right.
Everything I do.
All right, so...
is that your karaoke song?
That and, yeah, other Phil Bryan Collins Adams songs.
Yeah. I thought that was Bryan Adams.
Yeah, that was Bryan Adams. But for my own karaoke, I do a lot of other
Phil
songs.
Phil Collins.
Yeah.
All right, good for you.
What's everyone's karaoke song?
I wasn't prepared for this. Nerds.
What the hell was
what
that?
What the fuck was that? No, that was on my end, and I don't know.
Do you have a child you don't know about?
Maybe a few.
Probably a few, but yeah. I have no idea what the fuck
in
that
your house
was.
Right now?
Nerds.
Schedule?
Pardon, what, who?
He's making fun of your pronunciation.
The lack of respect I get on this podcast is just
horrible.
Just unbelievable.
At least you're not saying H. You've got that.
H. He says H.
Duncan.
Well, he's Australian.
Yeah, he says HBO.
HBO. I would say HBO, actually.
Yeah. He also says VHS.
I would say VHS, but
says VHS anymore. Like, seriously.
It was a book we were watching.
How would you guys say HBO?
A book you're watching?
HBO.
I said we were covering.
HBO.
H as opposed to H, which is just a difference in the way we pronounce things. But yeah, whatever.
Right. But it came up because there was a guy in the book named H, and it was spelled like A, what was it, A-C-H, Zach?
A-Y-T-C-H, I think.
A-Y-T-C-H, and he still said H.
Was it annoying?
No, it was just pointed out, and then he said VHS later on, and Greg went crazy.
It's a long story.
If more than like 3 people listen to the book clubs, you all would know, but I guess they're not very popular.
Nerds.
And you all should we just have one go around and everyone can talk about whichever podcast is coming up for them? As a way of publicizing future books. White Raven, have you got anything on board?
Rise and Fire reread 6.
Forward to it.
Yeah, isn't that supposed to be happening like right now?
A Song of Ice and Fire reread 6. Sorry, I said a podcast.
The FCR.
Oh, that. Oh, no, that's happening.
That? Is that the crossover FCR with?
Right.
Oh, cool.
I think we're doing the Silmarillion present.
Yeah, I'll try to be there. I might be late though. Mondays are hard for me. And Greg knows that, yet he continues to schedule him there. I think he's trying to tell me something.
Well, ask me about how he's scheduling them.
Huh?
Ask me about how I feel about the schedule for that one.
Oh, is it because they're bad times for you?
It's always at like 3 a.m. and I just can't do that.
I'm sorry,
John. It's 3 a.m. I bought a Silmarillion last year. I was so excited about the series. I bought a new Silmarillion when I was
Will it be better if we did earlier or later?
Like, not at fucking 3 a.m.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, it's tough because Greg... Go ahead, Zach.
I was just saying, in fairness, it's super hard to make this time.
No, it is, yeah. But I feel like in such a long series, there could have been one that wasn't, like, in the middle of the night. Just one.
Well, the hard part is, like, Greg struggles for, like, the weekend. He works a lot on the weekend,
but
so he can't...
Greg and I have been we were on this that wasn't when we were both on the last reread one. So we do, we have podcasts.
But that was on a Monday.
Like, yeah, but he actually had vacation today, so.
Because, like, so there do exist times when we're both awake, and so it's so...
Wait, he had vacation today? He could have been on this.
Oh, he doesn't like
us. No, that's why he isn't on it. He,
vacation he, from VOK.
He's away.
Oh, he's having VOK vacation.
Oh, well, there you go, Vikasha. There is a Silmarillion reread podcast going on as well, if you want to join that, because you and Tanya met at a Tolkien Oxenmoot,
yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oxford. Yeah.
What?
Huh? Yeah, tell people about Oxenmoot and how it was.
Oh, yeah, Oxenmoot. So, like, there's the Tolkien Society, and they have all sorts of events, and they have an annual event in Oxford called Oxenmoot, which is where a bunch of people meet up and talk about Tolkien for 4 days, which is really cool. And I was a dwarf this year, so.
Nerds.
What?
It's too late for her to record when you
get. I get up at 6:30 every day. I can't podcast at 3. And I get home at like 11 each day. I can't, like, I cannot podcast at 3. This is not happening.
If you were invited to do Podcast Advice for Fire with Mimi, would you wake up at 3?
Yes.
Oh.
Nerds.
I think we should ask Matt to say a tongue twister or something to test his verbal acuity right now.
He's not that good when he's normal.
True enough. I mean, hey, I talk right. I talk right good.
Nerds.
Is Bina here yet? Yeah, she just manifested in the bathroom.
And always in the bathroom. By the way, what happened with the bidet? Did you buy the house with the bidet?
No. Ugh.
Did you go back there? Did you ask for extra time in the bathroom?
No, we never went back to the house.
Did you not go back because it had a bidet?
No, it just wasn't for us.
Because of the bidet?
No, it was unrelated, but it didn't help.
Answer the question about the bidet.
So the bidet is a wash. It doesn't really matter.
It is a wash.
For something that didn't matter, it just seems like we spent a lot of time discussing it. So
I just had questions, and Europeans had answers. So.
Oh my god. Seriously, that discussion was great.
Say discussion again, Matt, because that was funny.
I went back and listened to it, and it didn't... I don't know. I guess probably because it didn't seem as fun when I listened to it.
It was hilarious.
When I re-listened to it, I cry laughing.
Huh.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah, we should do a whole episode on bidets.
I think we already did. I think that was enough.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Nerds.
Yeah, fuck you, Peter.
I don't think that she's leaving this.
Yeah.
Just make that the intro.
Yeah, fuck Peter.
I don't think Shellfish listens anymore, so I don't think it'll have any effect.
He might.
That makes me sad, though. If Peter doesn't listen.
Matt, why don't you record a speech for Peter, like asking him to come back to the podcast?
A plea.
Maybe come back.
Peter, Shellfish, please come back.
Now say, I'm...
That's beautiful. That's so convincing.
Good?
I thought it was going to be a little bit longer.
He's short and sweet.
Please come back because we miss you. And
you have
for
fans.
Other reasons.
Why do you miss him?
We miss you because you add so much. What?
That was perfect.
And also, the narwhal misses you.
Oh, this is him.
I don't know. I don't even know. Jesus Christ.
Well, that was 5 bonus minutes well worth spending.
Nerds.
Hey, you nerds. You want to listen to more nerd shit? Well, look at VLK. Because we got all the nerd shit.